This is Susan V. Brock Telluride, Inside and Out, and I'm honored to be speaking with author-illustrator Brian Selznick. His latest, or one of his books, The Invention of Hugo Cabret, is now the subject of a film being made by none other than Martin Scorsese. And he is about to launch a second book, Wonderstruck. They are two of about 25 books to his credit, four of which he has written and illustrated, about 21 of which he has simply illustrated. He's coming to town for a three-day event, the Young People's Literature Festival and Exhibition. That takes place Thursday, October 6th through Saturday, October 8th, and includes talks and art exhibitions. Brian, thanks so much for joining me.
Oh, thank you so much. Happy to be here.
You're welcome. So, Brian, are you a genetic fluke? Or are there other authors and or author-illustrators in your family?
Well, in my immediate family, I'm the only artist. My dad was an accountant, and my mom was a housewife. My sister's a kindergarten teacher, and my brother is a brain surgeon. But my dad, when he was in high school, used to draw. I have a little picture he did of William Shakespeare that I found tucked into the pages of his high school yearbook. But I come from a family that has a creative background back a few generations. My grandfather's cousin was David O. Selznick, who produced Gone with the Wind and King Kong and Rebecca, Duel in the Sun. And they grew up together, my grandfather and David O. Selznick, although they hated each other and never spoke again for the rest of their lives. But I like to say that, David O. Selznick was from the Los Angeles Hollywood side of the Selznicks, and I'm from the New Jersey dry cleaning side of the Selznicks. But we are still related.
Okay. Okay, thanks for that. At what point in your life did you know that making your literal mark on the page as an artist was your destiny?
I think I've always known in some way. When I was little, I drew all the time. My grandmother used to give me tinfoil to make sculptures from when I was very small, and I found my kindergarten report card a couple years ago, and it says Brian is a good artist. And so I always loved drawing. My dad, even though he was an accountant, really wanted his kids to do whatever it was they wanted to do. So he was always nervous that I wouldn't make any money as an artist, but he supported me being an artist. And it wasn't until I graduated from college and got a job at a children's bookstore that I realized that what I really wanted to be is a children's book illustrator and writer.
Okay, thank you. What was your hope for your future when you actually went to the Rhode Island School of Design, the college you attended? I guess you already had some inkling that you wanted to grow up in.
Yeah, I knew I wanted to be an artist, and like I said, but I didn't know what I wanted to do with it. So at RISD, we were able to take classes up at Brown University, which was right up the hill, and we were also able to participate in their theater. And so, because RISD at the time didn't have any theater, and so I did theater up at Brown, and my sophomore year, someone said to me, well, Brian, you're an artist, and you go to RISD, but you act and do theater here. So do you design sets? Because I'm proposing a set, and I would like, a show to do, and I'd like you to design it. And I said, I've never designed a set before in my life. I've never even thought about it. But we took out a napkin at the little cafe, the proverbial napkin, and he told me about the show they were doing called The Bald Soprano by Eugenia Ionesco, which I never heard of before. And I jotted down some ideas on the napkin, and he ended up doing the show at the student-run theater, and I designed the set. It was a big hit, and all of a sudden, I was a set designer, and it made perfect sense because of my love of theater and my love of art. And so my big plan was then to go to Yale and work with a brilliant designer there named Ming Cho Lee. And let's just say my interview didn't go very well at Yale. And at the time, I was devastated by the fact that I didn't get into Yale, although people said that you usually have to reapply a couple of times. But I took some time and traveled and realized that, what I love to do is draw and write, and I've always loved kids. And so that's when I began to realize that children's books might be in my future.
So did you channel Houdini's box? I believe that's the title of your first book. How did it come to you?
Yeah, it started as a project at RISD, of all things, because I spent my time at Rhode Island School of Design trying very hard not to be a children's book illustrator, because in high school that's what people used to tell me I should do. So as a young person, it made me rebel against that. And so Chris Van Allsburg and David McCauley, two very famous illustrators, taught at my school, and I never took any classes with them. And Maurice Sendak came to the school to speak, and I didn't go hear him speak. And so I took classes about how to draw better. I took classes about how to think in a more creative, interesting way. I took figure drawing classes. And so in one of my conceptual art classes, I had an assignment where we had to do something about Houdini. And we had a different assignment every week, so we had 7 days to do this project. And I decided to make this three-dimensional sculptural glass image of Houdini on stage performing the Chinese water torture test, one of his most famous escapes. And so it was 7 pieces of glass that fold back and forth, sort of like a folding screen, and each piece of glass is a different part of the same picture. So when you look at it from the front, it makes this three-dimensional picture. And because Houdini was my hero when I was a kid, I used to love to read books about him and see movies about him. That the Tony Curtis, Janet Leigh movie that was made in the 50s was how I first heard about him and was a big favorite of mine. And so I made this project as a, you know, my little tribute to Houdini. And then just because I loved him so much, I wrote a story about a kid who gets to meet Houdini, which I wrote on the back of each of those panels of glass and handed it in. I think I got a pretty good grade and got it back and forgot about it. And it wasn't until I had finished RISD and was trying to figure out what I was going to do that I remembered that project, and it was still in my parents' closet, and I took it, and it wasn't originally written for kids, but it's about a boy who's 10, it's about Houdini, who I loved as a kid, so I thought children might like it, and I took that story and rewrote it, expanded it, illustrated it with pen and ink drawings. That book is actually illustrated with Bic pen, although most of the rest of my books are pencil. And and that book got published while I was still working at Eeyore's Books for Children in New York. So it was fun to have customers come in and ask for a good book for a 10-year-old. And I'd say, oh, I happen to have the perfect book right here.
Nothing like press self-promotion. Okay. In general, if there is a general to this question, where do you find your muses?
You know, I think that most of the time the things that interest me now are related to things that interest me when I was a kid. Museums, monsters, movies, collecting things. These are the things in my life that I still find interesting and exciting. I still love to travel. I love to, you know, just go out and ride my bike or go for a run. And it feels like a little bit like it's going out into the world, you know, where I find a lot of my inspirations. I love to read. I love to do research. And so, you know, these ideas, you know, often will begin to form themselves into some kind of story. And then, it has a lot to do with the people who I've been lucky enough to meet, people whose work I really love, you know, whether it's Maurice Sendak or, you know, someone especially like Remy Sharlip.
Okay. Thank you for the transition. So under what circumstances did you meet Remy Sharlip? And what about the man and his work did you and do you find so compelling and appealing?
I guess you could say I first met Remy Sharlip when I was 6 or 7 years old, and I opened up Fortunately, which he had written and illustrated. And it's funny because I don't actually remember a lot of books from when I was a kid. I loved the book The Borrowers when I was a little older, about little people that live under the floorboards of this kid's house, and a book called The Door in the Wall about a boy whose father is a knight, but the boy is lame, and the father goes off to war. And so I don't remember a lot, but for some reason, my parents in East Brunswick, New Jersey, had like every one of Remy Sharlip's books. And so I loved Fortunately, about a boy named Ned who gets invited to a surprise birthday party, and then every time you turn the page, a different funny part of the adventure reveals itself. And then I loved his book 13, which every page tells 13 different stories, some just with pictures, some with words and pictures. And every time you turn the page, you move to the next moment in all 13 of those stories. I had a book called Hand Talk, which was a book Remy made in collaboration with some deaf artists and deaf performers to teach children how to fingerspell the alphabet and a few basic words in sign language. And so in a way, I feel like I've known Remy for my entire life. But when I grew up and became a children's book illustrator and was in New York, I also became a puppeteer. And my puppet work is for adult audiences. I don't really do puppetry for kids. And I became friends with a really brilliant theater director and puppet artist named Dan Herlin. And Dan and I have collaborated on a lot of shows. He's helped me make my own puppet pieces. I've helped him make his puppet pieces. And he teaches at Sarah Lawrence College, where he had also been a student. And I don't remember exactly when we were talking about it, but at some point Remy's name came up. And Dan said that not only had Remy been a teacher of his back when Dan was a student at Sarah Lawrence and Remy was teaching there, but Remy was his mentor, and they were still friends. And I was like, you know Remy Charlotte? You talk to him? And so Dan said, yeah, I'd love to introduce you. And so when Remy Charlotte was next in New York City visiting some friends, and Dan had a date to go say hi to Remy, he invited me to come along. And it was so exciting to meet Remy because I had loved his books for my entire life. I felt like I had loved him for his, you know, for my entire life. And he's the most warm, generous, loving, open person. And so it was a thrill to meet him. And and on top of that, you know, so we became friends, and so I was, you know, and at the time I was working on the invention of Hugo Cabret, and when I met him, I realized that he looks just like George Melies, one of the main characters in the book, and so I was able to ask him if he would pose as one of the characters in my book, and he said yes. So Remy became an intrinsic part of a book that was really important to me, and so that was incredibly moving to me. And then when I told him what I was trying to do with the invention of Hugo Cabret and how I was going to have parts of the narrative told not with text but with long sequences of illustrated pictures like a picture book, Remy, you know, Remy said, "Oh, I wrote an essay about that in the 70s," and so he sent me this essay called "A Page Is a Door," and it's really an incredible essay, very short little essay, about the power of turning the page, about what happens when you turn the page in a picture book, what can be done, and that ended up serving as a real guide and inspiration for what I was doing with the invention of Hugo Cabret.
Okay. Now I understand that Remy had a hand in getting you to Telluride. How did that work?
Well, the show in Telluride is about Remy and his work. In Italy last year, there was a really beautiful show about Remy's work, and I was in Italy for an event, and I was able to go and speak at this show for Remy. And it was a thrill for me because I've known Remy for a while now. I go to his house. I've seen a lot of his original work, but there were things in this show that I had never seen before. They had the original drawings from Fortunately, which I had never actually seen before. And so it's always exciting to see the original pieces of paper that an artist has touched and how the paint is placed and, you know, where everything is put, and just to know that you're in the proximity of this piece of paper in the same way the original artist was always been a thrill for me. So I got to see these incredible works of art by him. They had you know, Remy, of course, is also a really wonderful dancer and choreographer and improviser. And so they had some dance pieces recreating some things that Remy had done. There was a part where you could do one of Remy's dances yourself. He does these things called airmail dances where he draws little figures in different positions, and then he sends them to dance companies or to friends or to people who are interested. And your job is to hit each of those different positions, but the way you transition from position to position is up to you. So each one is always different. And so there's one called Reading Dance with a big overstuffed armchair and a book. And so there was the exact armchair from his drawing was in the gallery. So we were able to do that. And I was able to talk about Remy and my love for him and you know, how important his work is in the history of children's literature. And so when our friend Erica Bradfield said that there was going to be this big show of Remy's work at Telluride, I was so excited. I, you know, mostly just for the opportunity to see his work again, just for the ability to walk through the galleries and see it and know that it would be shared with people here in the States and specifically in Telluride was very, very thrilling. And so as we got to talking about what the show was going to be, we thought that it might make sense to have some work from The Invention of Hugo Cabret as part of the show, since Remy was such an intrinsic part of my work on Hugo, and Remy has been such a big inspiration on me. We could then talk about how Remy's influence has, you know, carried on and been such a big part of, you know, someone else who's doing children's books. And so I was very honored to be asked to have some work in the show as well. And then when we talked about me coming and discussing Remy's work and you know, and a little bit about my own work, but discussing how Remy's, you know, been such a big influence on me, I jumped at the chance. Plus, I've never been to Telluride, and so I thought that would be really fun. Everyone says it's the most beautiful place I'll ever go, and you know, we were hoping that Remy might be able to come, and that was one of the main reasons I said yes, was because Remy was originally going to be there, and we were going to get the chance to be together because we don't get the chance to be together that much. But unfortunately, his health precluded him from traveling. So now I feel like I'm coming to represent, and I'm here for Remy because I love him so much.
Okay, wonderful. And then there's another major figure entering your life in the form of Martin Scorsese. How did this film project based on Hugo Cabret come about, and how do you feel about it?
One way or another, somehow my book made its way to Martin Scorsese's desk. His 10-year-old daughter, Francesca, had read the book. And I think because the book is about the history of cinema, it has to do with Georges Méliès, Scorsese decided that he wanted to make this movie. He wanted to turn this book into a movie. And I think the idea of making a movie that Francesca could participate in, that Francesca could see, really making something as, you know, sort of as a gift for his daughter, really excited him. And yeah, so one day I got a phone call that said Martin Scorsese wants to make a movie out of your book. And as you can imagine, a phone call like that is a really unbelievable thing. And there was quite a bit of shock and disbelief. And that was followed by several years of ups and downs and reading the script, and then Scorsese leaving the project because there was a writer strike, and then him making other movies and a different director coming and that director leaving and Scorsese coming back because he really wanted to make this movie. And as soon as he came back, everything started moving really fast. And he works with this, you know, brilliant team of collaborators. And they, of course, all came with him. And so as excited as I was about having Scorsese direct the film, I was that excited about having John Logan write the script and Dante Ferretti design the sets. Dante started working with Federico Fellini and has won several Oscars. Cindy Powell did the costumes. She's won 3 Oscars. I mean, his casting director, Ellen Lewis, who's cast, I think almost every one of his movies. Thomas Schoonmaker, of course, who's edited every film of his from Raging Bull forward. You know, like, this is an incredible group of people who make some of the best movies that have ever been made. And to think that they were going to then be working on an adaptation of my book was, really beyond anything I could have imagined. And I went to the set 3 times. I was there for a couple weeks while they were filming. Scorsese is making the movie in 3D, which is something he hasn't done before.
Right.
And, a lot of people have said that this is, a really big departure from him, or how could the guy who did Goodfellas do a movie for children? But I feel like people who say that don't really know the history of Scorsese's films, because all he's done from the beginning of his career is experiment and push himself. I mean, he followed Mean Streets with a documentary, right, and then with New York, New York, which is a movie musical. And, he followed Taxi Driver with Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore. I might have gotten that reversed. He might have followed the other ones with the other ones. But along these lines, Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore is, it's sort of like an homage to these 1940s women pictures with, Ellen Burstyn, who won an Oscar for her performance in the movie. So, like, all he's done is push himself and try new things throughout his entire career. And here was something that was both related to things that Marty had always loved and had always been interested in his films, different ideas that he'd been interested in exploring, and things that were new. And so, seeing what he was doing with the 3D, using 3D in a way that I don't think any director has ever used it before, thinking about how to tell the story with this new technology, thinking about what it's like to be back with Méliès,
mm-hmm.
Scorsese is a scholar of film history, and this gave him the opportunity to recreate the filming of George Méliès' movies. And so that was a huge thrill for him. But when I first met him, one of the things he said to me was that all the technology, the scale of all the sets, all of that isn't going to matter if we don't care about this boy. And so his concern from the very beginning was always to tell the story. And I just saw the movie for the first time yesterday, and it's beautiful. It's an incredibly beautiful, very faithful adaptation of my story. And, you just fall in love with this kid. And, I made this book to be a book. I made The Invention of Hugo Cabret because it's about a book. It's about turning the pages. It's inspired by Remy, and I never imagined it could be a movie. But my book is a celebration of movies. But what Marty did was take that same story and make it into something that actually is a celebration of reading. There's a lot of celebration of books and reading woven throughout the story. But ultimately, he's made it into something that feels like it has to be a movie. It's a really incredible magic trick he's performed, and an amazing thing to be part of.
Wonderful. I am sure when we see it, we will all be wonderstruck.
I hope so.
So this has been Susan B. Brock, Kelly Wright, Inside and Out, speaking with author, illustrator Brian Selznick. He's coming to town for a major event based on his work and that of his friend Remy Sharlop. It's called the Young People's Literature Festival and Exhibit. It takes place, October 6th, which is a Thursday, through October 8th, which is a Saturday, in Telluride, and all are welcome. Brian, thanks so much for taking time out of your incredible schedule to join me.
Oh, thank you so much. It was great to talk to you.
Likewise.